Hello, and again, welcome to the Labyrinth Library Podcast. How are you doing? I hope that you are well. If you are listening from the East Coast of the United States, I hope you survived Irene well with a minimum of damage, wind shear, torn off roofs, flooded basements, all that stuff. If you're listening to this, I assume that you have, so bravo for you. For everyone else, I hope that you are well, and I hope that no giant storms are bearing down on you. We do have a large storm bearing down on us, actually, over here. There's a typhoon on its way. The rain has already started. Now, fortunately for us, the typhoons here are rarely as large as the hurricanes in the U.S., but they do have their own special charm, so we will try to stay high and dry as well. So let's see, what's the news going on right now? The big news for comic book fans, if you are one of them, and I am, as you can tell by this week's review, is that today, or yesterday, or August 31st, depending when you're listening, is the big day for DC Comics, the day that they start their whole great big universe-wide reboot. They released two titles on the 31st. One was the fifth issue of Flashpoint, which is sort of the transition series that goes from the old universe to the new. And the other is the Justice League number one, which is their flagship title for the new universe. So if you're not familiar with this, if you're not a big comic book fan, you probably don't care and it doesn't really matter to you. If you are a big comic book fan, especially if you are a diehard of the DC universe, which I am, this means a lot. I mean, for one thing, they're basically taking all the stories and starting from zero or starting from one. Anything is possible now. The entire old continuity is more or less gone, although not necessarily. Some pieces of it may survive, and we don't know what. So that's half the fun, is finding out what happened, what still happened, and what hasn't happened. But then there's other things. They're changing the characters around. Sinestro's a Green Lantern now. Wonder Woman probably doesn't have pants this time, but you never know. Superman's got knee pads and no red underwear, so it's a big thing, really. And I'm really looking forward to reading it. They did promise to have the same day paper and digital downloads. The paper went on sale. My Twitter feed went nuts with people who were in New York hanging out outside Midtown Comics, buying the new titles. The digital downloads have not yet been made available. I hope they do that soon, because I would really like to read these comics. But that is neither here nor there. That's not what we're talking about, and you probably don't want to hear me ramble about that all day. So why don't we get to the title we are talking about, which, as I said last week, is a comic. And I gave you what I thought was a pretty easy clue. The two major teams, the flagship teams, if you will, of the two major companies kind of getting together. I did not get any correct guesses, which is disappointing. But yes, the title we're looking at this week, a graphic novel, a special collected edition of JLA Avengers. Here's the thing with this title. Everybody loves a team-up. No matter who your favorite hero is, whether it's sports, music, science, writing, art, you really get a secret thrill from the idea of what they could do if they worked together. Sometimes it's brilliant, like when Neil Gaiman and Terry Pratchett teamed up to do Good Omens, one of my favorite books ever. Sometimes it's inspiring, like the pop music wonder We Are the World back in the day. Sometimes it's a little bit overwhelming, like the 1992 Olympics basketball dream team. Sometimes it's damn Yankees, and the less said about that, the better. But regardless, we all love to play that game, right? Of what if. Or maybe I do. You should too. Where you take the greatest talents we know, and maybe sometimes the greatest talents in history, and pair them together and try to imagine what they could accomplish. I mean, what if Albert Einstein and Isaac Newton could have studied the universe together? What if we could get Abraham Lincoln, Franklin Roosevelt, and John F. Kennedy together to work on the problems facing the United States? What if Kurt Cobain and Jimi Hendrix were able to cut an album together? The team-ups are endless, and most of the time, unfortunately, they're impossible. But that's where fiction steps in. The Justice League was created by Gardner Fox and Mike Sekowski over at DC Comics back in 1960. Now, the idea was to take the greatest heroes the company had in their library and team them up to fight battles that no one hero could fight by themselves. The first among them, I believe, was Starro the Conqueror, and then there were many more. They fought aliens and mad scientists, evil kings, vengeful gods. All those who attempted to conquer, destroy, or devour the Earth were stopped by the League. Now, the membership has changed many times over the years, as has the style of the books, but the League has always been a fixture in the DC Comics universe, for the last 40 years anyway. Now, the way Stan Lee tells the story, the publisher of DC Comics, Jack Liebowitz at the time, was bragging over a round of golf to the owner of Marvel, this guy Martin Goodman, about how well his new Justice League title was selling. After the game, Goodman called Stan Lee and told him to create a hero team to compete. Stan's wild imagination provided him with the Fantastic Four, him and Jack Kirby, and a comic book arms race had begun. Lee produced hero after hero for Marvel, conveniently housing most of them in New York City. From there, it made sense to have them get together to fight even greater menaces. With the pencils and the writing of comic book legend Jack Kirby, Lee created the Avengers, the mightiest hero team of the Marvel Universe. And they too have undergone a lot of changes in the last four decades, but they remain the elite team of heroes to which every costumed adventurer aspires. Superman, Batman, Aquaman, Wonder Woman, Green Lantern, Flash, Martian Manhunter, Captain America, Thor, Iron Man, Ant-Man, Hulk, the Wasp, Hawkeye. These are names that every comic book fan should know, and deep down inside we all wonder, what would it be like if they could get together? And what's more, what kind of foe would require the combined might of two of the greatest hero teams in comic book history? It could only be something on a monumental scale, something that endangers the existences of both universes. Something like Krona. Now, if you're a longtime comic book reader, especially DC Comics, you might know that name. Krona was the reason for the Crisis on Infinite Earths back in 85. His obsession with seeing the beginning of the universe led to the fissioning of that universe into a nigh infinite number of parallel ones. It was only after a titanic series of battles that the singular universe was put right, and Krona was transformed into pure energy and banished for his crimes. Or, so we thought. Obsessive to the core, Krona figured out how to escape his universe and started again on his quest to understand the beginning of all things, even if it meant destroying every single universe that defied him. Eventually he came to meet the Grandmaster, an immortal on the Marvel side, whose limitless existence drove him to play cosmic games of chance with whatever other great powers he encountered. He knew someone who could possibly answer Krona's questions, the great planet devourer Galactus, and challenged him to a contest. The greatest heroes of each universe would compete to gather items of power. If the DC team won, Krona would leave and search elsewhere. If Marvel's team won, it would bring ultimate destruction to both cosmoses. And so the teams met. And like all good superhero team-ups, it started with a fight. Something about the two worlds put the visitors on edge, and both Superman and Captain America were willing to pound their opposite numbers into the dirt if need be. And fortunately, as in all good hero team-ups, their differences were put aside in favor of battling Krona and saving both of their universes from utter annihilation. It is really a vast story, both in time and space, and it manages to bring together pretty much everyone who's ever been part of the two teams, both in terms of the heroes that made them up and the villains that they fight. And yet, at the same time, it feels fairly intimate. You know, these aren't two whole universes that are battling for survival, but two teams who managed to mesh together surprisingly well. And a lot of the credit for this, of course, has to go to the writer, Kurt Busiek, who had the unenviable task of penning a story that made the best and fairest use of both teams. After all, never underestimate partisan fans, the ones who would be utterly incensed by Superman beating Thor, or the idea that Captain America could possibly be Batman's equal in hand-to-hand combat. I'm sure there were people on both sides of the publishing divide who were keeping very careful account of which team came off better in this fight, but that's not the way the book was meant to be read. Busiek's mission was to create a threat that could only be contained by two teams together, which meant that neither team by itself was enough to win, which means that you should shut up already about whether or not Superman should have been able to use Thor's hammer, dammit! Sorry. Even for all the care that went into writing this story, it never would have worked without an artist capable of handling that many characters and making sure they all look their best. When you have a universe-spanning epic with a cast of far too many, there is only one person you can call, and that is George Perez. Not only can he handle a chaotic battle scene, making every hero look, well, heroic, but he's just as good at the casualness of a Christmas party, or the masks-off teamwork that's involved in trying to build a reality-piercing spaceship. Whether facing off against great cosmic powers or chatting next to the coffee urn, Perez knows how to make these people look damn good. There's just nobody else like him. With Outstanding Colors by Tom Smith, honestly, I could just read this book for the artwork alone. Now, what I also found interesting was a look at how the two worlds are fundamentally different, not only in their stories, but also in their very makeup. For example, The Flash cannot run in the Marvel Universe because the Speed Force doesn't exist there, while the Scarlet Witch's powers are multiplied to dangerous levels in the DC Universe thanks to the strength of the Lords of Chaos. The differences in geography and the sizes of the Earths, the types of energy they receive from their suns, the fundamental forces that hold their universes together are a huge obstacle to getting the teams to work together. And as far as I know, it's the first attempt to sort of kind of scientifically delineate how they're different. There's also a bit of an ideological analysis as well. Each team first notices how differently heroes are treated in their opposite worlds. The heroes of the Marvel Universe are tolerated but never really trusted. The non-powered citizenry tend to be more afraid of superheroes, especially the mutants, and so the abilities of groups like the Avengers to affect positive change on their world is limited. So to Superman, this looks like Marvel's heroes aren't bothering to make their world better, but only remaining satisfied to hold the status quo. On the DC side, heroes are beloved. Superman is a planet-wide hero, Wonder Woman is an ambassador of peace, and the people of Central City have built an entire museum to honor the Flash. These people revere their heroes as both celebrities and saviors, which is something that Captain America views as a step towards fascism. Costumed gods with their pet people ready to do whatever they say. Neither viewpoint is entirely right, but they do reflect a fundamental difference in the way each company approaches its storytelling. To put that editorial decision in front of the characters was a very interesting choice, and allowing them to come to their own judgments was fun, if slightly unnerving to read. All in all, JLA Avengers is a great team-up story, one that should make the fans on both sides happy for quite a long while, and as far as I know, at least on the DC side, it's canon. Very often when these things happen, and they've happened before, we've seen X-Men and Teen Titans, Spider-Man and Superman have met, but for some reason they always forget, or they're non-canonical, right? I do believe that this story is actually canonical. The JLA team never mentions it again. They never explicitly say, hey, do you remember when we hung out with Captain America? But the effects of this book continue into the Justice League books in the future, unless I'm reading it wrong. Anyway, let me give you a quote. This is when Captain America is fighting Prometheus. Now, we all know who Captain America is a super soldier created in the 1940s to battle the forces of the Nazis, frozen for a very long time, and then revived to fight in the modern world with the Avengers. Prometheus is a supervillain who is a fantastic technologist and who's got this helmet that can sort of implant him with certain powers and abilities, and he once took down the entire Justice League in about 10 minutes. He's really good. Well, he gets into a fight with Captain America, which is always a bad idea, and Cap says, true to his form, he says, neural chaff, hypnotic lights, pre-programmed skills. Try fighting the Wehrmacht, mister. It teaches you focus. It is true. You really can't argue with Cap. You know, if you fought the Nazis, well, there's nowhere else to go. Anyway, especially the super Nazis. Anyway, that is JLA Avengers. It is a ripping fine yarn. I think you'll enjoy it. Longtime comic book fans should enjoy it a lot more, especially if they don't overthink it and try to figure out who wins. Because nobody wins. Everybody wins. And nobody wins. But that is neither here nor there, and we're gone a little bit long. So why don't I give you the clue to next week's book? I chose next week's book because of a certain anniversary that is coming up in approximately 11 days. From the U.S., you know exactly what anniversary that is. In fact, if you're around most of the world, you probably know exactly what anniversary that is. And this book starts with that day. And while it's partly about some of the repercussions of that day on the national psyche, it's also about how we live as a culture in the modern age and why it is that the safest, most prosperous countries in the world are also the most worried and terrified. That's all the clues I can really give you, I think. See if you can figure out what it is. I do keep trying to make these clues easier, but then I feel bad for making them easier, so I make them harder, which is sort of self-defeating. Anyway, whatever. I hope that you have a good week. I hope that you have clear weather and sunny skies and nothing of any true terrible excitement happens to you. So, stay well. I will talk to you all again next week. A text version of this review will be up on the blog, thelablib.org, along with any relevant links I can think of. If you have anything you want to say or any suggestions you'd like to make, please leave a comment and let me know. If you have a book you would like to recommend, I would be happy to hear it. If you'd like to send me an email, send it to labyrinthlibrary@gmail.com. And if you like what you hear, please give a review on iTunes, become a fan on Facebook, or follow LabLib on Twitter. This podcast is covered by a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives license, so feel free to share it, but please don't sell it or change it. The music is courtesy of Kevin MacLeod at www.incompetech.com. Thanks for listening. I'll be back next week. And until then, keep reading.